Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, I'm Harriet Minter, and this is the Badass Women's Hour. This week, I've tried to find news that didn't relate to either the Euros or politics, but I failed, so I'm going to talk about the Euros. Plus, I'm also talking to Michelle Ellman, aka Scarred Not Scared, about her books, Boundaries and Body Image. And I answer the eternal question, what do you do when you just don't feel good enough? First up, let's talk about the Euros. Not a topic I thought I'd be talking about because, well, I know next to nothing about football and I've not really ever had any interest in it. However, this year I did find myself kind of swept along by it. I think it's unsurprising that I don't have a lot of interest in football. I come from a largely female family, apart from my dad and the dog. I went to an all-girls school where they didn't teach football, so we're automatically kind of excluded from this piece of British culture. And let's face it, even though we do have a very successful women's team, which made the final of the UEFA Women's Championships in 1984 and 2009, so they're quite good, we don't really ever talk about them. So I haven't been that interested in the Euros previously. In fact, I didn't really know they were different from the World Cup, if I'm being honest. But something about this year's team and the way they have behaved and the spirit that is kind of exuding from them has really caught my heart. There's a sense that actually they are good people just trying to do a really good job. And whenever I see that in any profession, I find it completely heartwarming. But because I've done this show now for so long, and because on this show we make a point of talking about race and racism here in the UK, it was heartbreaking but not at all surprising to me to see the response that happened on Monday. And the thing that I found really shocking about it was that while obviously my timeline was filled with people condemning it, that wasn't how it was everywhere else. In fact, I was watching Sky Sports, again, not a usual experience for me, but it does occasionally happen, and they interviewed a guy called Steve McLaren. I don't know who he was. Apparently, he was the England manager in the mid-2000s. And they asked him as the final question, what would you say to the people that have been kind of hurling racist abuse at the players? And he prevaricated. He talked about how it was a need for education. He talked about how it was only a small minority of people and we mustn't let it ruin the sport. He talked about how we needed to go into schools and address the issue in schools. But he didn't actually ever say, it's appalling and these people should be prosecuted. Which is, as far as I'm concerned, the only answer to that question. And for me, that's what happens when we don't take a firm stand on something. There is an importance, a huge importance in empathy. And I'm going to talk about how I feel that has impacted the England team itself. But that empathy has to have limits. So we can empathise with people doing things that we don't agree with. We can say, actually, I understand where they come from. Perhaps their background has impacted this. Perhaps their experiences have impacted this. But that doesn't mean that you don't then also just turn around and say, but that is still wrong. It's not okay. It's not acceptable. It's not part of the culture that we live in. And for me, when I look at the team and what Gareth Southgate created in them, I see a group of people that have huge empathy for each other and the importance that we can all take from that about creating teams and leadership, which is actually if we don't have empathy and we don't teach our teams to understand each other, you can't create that sense of commitment and connection, but also a real understanding of where they draw their lines and what is important to them. If you've listened to this podcast before, you know that I might be a little bit obsessed with Marcus Rashford. his statement on who he is and where he sees his strengths and weaknesses and what he has learned from the Euros that will change him, but also what will stay the same for him, is a really powerful one. And I urge you to go and look on his Twitter and have a read. Because what he says is that there's a place for all of us to learn and grow, but we also have to remember who we are at our heart. And I think I would like some of those people hurling that racist abuse to think about that today.
This is the Badass Women's Hour podcast.
My next guest is a classic badass. Her determined and no-nonsense and just downright funny Instagram has brought her devoted followers, and her straightforward approach to looking after herself is one we can all learn from. She is the queen of boundaries, and her new book teaches us how to set them. This is Michelle Ellman.
Hi, so lovely to talk to you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Tell us, why is it a joy being selfish?
Because I feel like we are so on board whenever it comes to self-love and self-care, but then you say selfish and people go, oh, wait, hold on, you're going too far. So the thing is, in order to actually make time for self-love and self-care, you actually do need to be selfish, because if you're going to wait until you've done everything for everyone else first, you'll have no time and energy left. And so selfish, as much as it has a negative connotation, you do need to disregard someone else's needs in order to prioritize your own. So an example of that is if you need to rest on a Saturday evening, like night, then you need to disregard your boss's emails, because it's 10 o'clock on a 8 o'clock on a Saturday night. I deserve to rest. Therefore, I'm going to prioritize my need. And so my boss might think I'm being selfish, but it's also just reprioritizing my needs.
So I absolutely hear what you're saying, and I completely agree with it. But why do we find it so hard? Because it seems like the most obvious thing in the world to say, actually, I need to rest now, so I am not going to respond to that email or go out with my friend who's having a hard time or whatever it is. And yet we still say yes.
Because I think particularly in women, we've been trained to give as much of ourselves as possible. And the best people in society, the selfless people, are the people who give all of themselves and don't require anything back. Because if you require anything, what do you get labeled as? Needy or naggy. If you have needs and you vocalize those needs, needy and naggy are the two words thrown against women. Mm. And so it's become normalized that when we give to others, when we're a good wife, when we're a good employee, when we're a good friend, then we are of value in society and we're worthy. But actually, how about if we start defining our worth and not on based on the actions that we take?
Do you think that you used to be a people pleaser?
100%. I was the biggest pushover in the world. Why do you care so much about boundaries? I'm a recovered pushover.
How did you start to recover?
Being really honest, it started with a day that my boyfriend said that I was at his beck and call. Oh. And I took a moment and went, wow, not only do you know that I'm a pushover, but you have the audacity to say it to my face. And I kind of had a, you know, those moments in life where you do a like reality check on your life, mm-hmm. and you go, this is not the direction I want to be going in. And so I kind of looked around at my life and I was like, I'm surrounded by people who treat me awfully. How the hell am I meant to have any self-esteem when even the people around me don't love and respect me the way I should?
It's so interesting, isn't it? Because actually we think, oh, I really love you, particularly in relationships. I really love you and I want the best for you, and I'm going to give in order for you to have the best, because I expect that you would do the same for me, right? And then we get to a point where we're like, oh, hang on, I've given and given and given some more and still giving. When are you going to return the favor? And it just doesn't work in the way that we think it's going to. Do you think some people are better at being selfish?
I think men are better at being selfish. but I think because they've not been trained to. And I think if we actually look at the way we bring up women versus how we bring up men, that's the difference. But I also think that all relationships benefit from you taking care of yourself. And when you, for example, care to your partner's emotions, not only are you doing them a disservice because they don't learn how to take care of their own emotions, but actually you're sending the implicit message that you don't believe they are capable enough themselves.
Yeah. I mean, this is a really interesting thing, isn't it? Because weirdly, we're sort of insulting them by looking after them. How can we...
It's like this learned helplessness.
It really is. How do we have the... Because I think most people who are people pleasers, and I count myself, it's definitely a recovering, if not quite recovered, one of those. I don't like to upset people. You know, I don't like people to feel like I have, you know, really pointed out the massive flaw in their personality or the thing they really need to do and they're just not doing it. I don't like having those awkward conversations with people. How can we do it in a way where, A, we feel like actually we hold our ground, and B, we just don't feel like it's the most horrible thing we've ever had to do?
Well, I don't know if you've ever found, but when you're in those conversations and you're trying to not hurt someone's feelings, it mm-hmm. actually makes you feel really anxious because you can't control them and that their response is not your responsibility. So trying to control something that is actually out of your control is a losing battle. And it's why when it comes to boundary setting, in the book, I outline your six obstacles of boundary setting. And one of them is very much the fear of being disliked. And that comes up because when you do choose yourself, it's not always going to be convenient for people around you. And therefore, in those moments, you have to remind yourself why you're actually doing it. And if you return to how you feel, a lot of the time, what will be lying under that anxiety is actually or joy or pride, or all of these things, but you can't feel it because you're so concerned about them and their thoughts. So part of reprioritizing yourself, part of setting boundaries, is also realizing that you deserve to be the center of your own universe for a bit. And that in order for you to take care of others, you actually need to have a full cup, or metaphor about putting
put your mask on first.
Yeah, before everyone else. Yeah.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
I think it's really interesting because you said at the beginning, like, we talk a lot about self-care and self-love and looking after ourselves, and particularly in this time of the pandemic, putting ourselves first. But what are some strategies for actually saying no to people in a way that feels good and authentic to us? So, for example, if, you know, our boss does email us and say, we need a reply on this ASAP, how can we assert a boundary with them without getting fired?
So with email, for example, you can reply to the email. If you don't feel comfortable ignoring it, then you can reply to the email saying, great, thank you so much for your email. I'll get back to you on Monday.
Yeah.
That's not you actually saying no. And that's you saying, I'll get back to it when I'm on the clock. Like, just because in a pandemic we're stuck in our houses doesn't mean you get access to me 100% of just because it's kind of this mentality that because we're in our house we have nothing better to do, so therefore we might as well be answering our emails. But actually, me wanting to sit down and watch TV choice, and just because in society it's seen as productive, doesn't mean it's not a valuable, worthy use of my time.
And it's really interesting, actually, isn't it, that a lot of this is about our value to society and how society values us and sees us. And actually, you know, particularly as women, we are taught that our value lies in how hard we work and how much we give and how loving we are and how supportive we are and how pleased other people are with us. How can we maybe redefine our value?
Well, I think the beautiful thing about boundaries is it sets a firm line between who you actually are and who the world wants you to be. And once you start noticing it, it's really hard to not notice it. So, for example, one place where I notice it a lot now is on dating apps, where men are always looking for easygoing women or women who are spontaneous. And now I see that and I'm like, it's code word for you have no need. And spontaneous means I'm not going to have any plans. And when I do, it'll be last minute and I expect you to with that. And it's code words like that, or no drama. That means if you have an issue, you must not voice it. They say no drama quite a lot on dating apps. No drama, and no nagging, no needing. Again, the same words that I use against women. And so once you notice it, you go, wait, hold on. If that's the kind of guy I want, fine, sure. Right. But if I want someone who, when I vocalize my needs, not only meets those needs, but will communicate back with me if they are not able to fulfill it, then I need to actually start raising the bar in my life for how people treat me. And that's not just romantic relationships. That's family relationships. That's friends. That's in the workplace as well.
Do you know, as you're saying, this reminds me of a story. When I was in my 20s, I had a group of friends, and there was a guy in this group of friends who was notorious for kind of cycling through women quite quickly. And then he met this one girl, and that was it. Within minutes, he was smitten. She was the one. They ended up getting married. And she was brilliant. And we asked her, you know, we said, I don't know, like, how you did it. How did you convert this absolute womanizer into this totally committed, in love, adorable man? And she said, I don't know. And then we asked her about kind of when they first started dating. And on their second date, he had organized a second date for a Wednesday. On Tuesday, he hadn't texted her. And so she texted him and said, are we still going out? And he said, oh yeah, absolutely, really looking forward to it. And she said, okay, where shall we meet? And he said, I'm not sure, I'll let you know tomorrow. And so on the Wednesday, she turned up for this date with him. And the first thing she said to him was, look, I just want to be really clear with you. If you want to continue going out with me, you can't tell me the day before that we are going out and on the day where we're going. Because I like to plan and I like to decide what I'm going to wear, and I don't want you mucking around with my weekday plans.
So that's really funny, because I have a very similar story in my book where a guy was saying, I'll let you know tomorrow. Like this, if they can do it, they will.
Yeah.
So he said to me, I'll let you know tomorrow. And I was like, no, it was over. I just went, that doesn't work for me. Either let me know now or I'm making other plans. And literally a instant response saying, all right, Miss Sassy, 3 p.m. it is. And as I write in the book, I'm like, it's not the fact his schedule changed. It's the fact that because I wouldn't accept that level of treatment, he made it a priority to book a time in. And when he came over, he was like, I'd known him for 2 years. And it was because I just learned boundaries. And I was like, nope, this isn't. I know how this works. It means either you cancel last minute and I end up resentful. Or you end up telling me so last minute that I have no time to get ready. And then I end up sitting around all day for you. I mean, how much power is that? So I was like, no, I'm deciding my schedule. Let me know now. Otherwise, I'm making other plans. My world doesn't revolve. I didn't write my world doesn't revolve. And so I have the exact example in the book. And I just say it's a reprioritizing of you in their schedule. It's not their schedule change.
And there's something really powerful about that, which is actually when we acknowledge, as you said, that we have needs and it's okay to have them. And if you can't deal with them, you're not the person for me. When I first started dating my boyfriend and he cancelled our first date, he says that he didn't, he absolutely did. And then he kept texting me, and I just said to him, I was like, I really like chatting to you, but I'm not going to continue to chat to you if we are not definitely going out on this day and you tell me when it is, because it creates a full sense of intimacy and I don't have time for it. He went, oh, okay.
I also think dating kind of create that culture where it's okay to cancel last minute. And just like you, I'm a person who's like, if you cancel me, like, you're going to have to convince me the second time.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a person who takes my time lightly. Like, my time is valuable. And so if you don't treat that, then I'll find someone who will.
Yeah. It's so interesting. We all need to do more of it. Michelle, I absolutely love talking to you about this. I could talk to you about it for hours. Great. It's been so good. But if you want more of Michelle's wisdom, it is in The Joy of Being Selfish. It's out now. You can tell she's got an answer for everything. But mainly that actually when we just express our needs to people, when we tell people what we need and how, they respond. It's much easier. Men and women, just tell us what you need. And then the other side knows if they can be a yes or a no to it. So simple. If only I'd known that when I was dating in my 20s. There we go.
That was Michelle Ellman, author, Instagram star, and general all-round badass. And for our listener problem this week, we talk about being enough, or not being enough. The email reads, I think I have imposter syndrome. I have a great job and a lovely partner, but I constantly feel like I'm going to lose them both, or that one day my boss will realise I'm actually not good enough and my partner will leave me. I know it's ridiculous and I should just let it go, but instead I have constant anxiety about it. What can I do? So yes, this is a bit of imposter syndrome. For anyone who doesn't know, imposter syndrome is this idea that when we get something good, we feel not quite worthy of it, as though somehow we are slightly living somebody else's life and that any moment people are going to find out and send us back to where we came from. And Brené Brown, who, as you know, I love, talks about this and she has a term for it. So she talks about this feeling of being in something really lovely and then being struck by the fear of it ending. And she calls it foreboding joy. And what she says is essentially that when we're in something really joyful, it's actually hard to just enjoy it. It's hard to just sit in that space and be like, oh, this is lovely and I'm so thrilled to be here, because instantly our brain kicks into a fear mode and starts to think about what happens when we lose it or what happens when perhaps it gets taken away from us. And imposter syndrome really plays into foreboding joy. So imposter syndrome not only says you're not good enough or you shouldn't be here, but it also says, and it's going to get taken away. Somebody is going to find you out. And the real kind of trick with both of those things is to simply be in the moment. So with imposter syndrome, there are lots of things you can do to help yourself out. For example, make sure it's really important, write down compliments or achievements when you have them. So when somebody sends you something nice or tells you something good, make a note of it somewhere you can find it later on when you're not feeling so good. If you've got those kind of moments of joy happening and you can be in them, really relish them, like practice some mindfulness around them, take some time to really sit in them quietly and just enjoy. But also with foreboding joy, I like to remember the idea that this too shall pass. So this kind of plays into a little bit the idea of this is going to come over. But what it says, this too shall pass, is a phrase we usually use when bad things are happening, right? So something bad is happening and we say, oh, well, it'll be over at some point. Things will have to change. But I also think it's really useful when good things are happening, because it reminds us that, yeah, it might be over at some point. So we should enjoy it in the moment, right? And that doesn't mean that your partner is going to leave you, or the boss is going to realize you're terrible and fire you. But what it does mean is that inevitably things will shift. So maybe you'll have an argument with your partner and you'll have to resolve that, or maybe your boss will leave and you'll get another boss that you won't like as much. Whatever it is, things will shift, and so while you're in it, you need to try and enjoy it as much as you can. And very often imposter syndrome comes from kind of our childhood and notions we were brought up with around success and being good enough, and it's very often linked with people that have high levels of perfectionism. I know that well. And so if you know that that's you, I really would say please go and talk to somebody about it. Go and do some therapy around where that comes from and how you could perhaps try and get in front of it a little bit. I did a lot of CBT around this a few years ago and it really, really helped. One of the things they taught me is that when you have those feelings of kind of dread or fear, they often then trigger a behaviour, and that behaviour is often a bit self-sabotaging, and then that adds to the feeling of not good enough, which then adds to the feeling of dread and fear. So instead, when you have that feeling of dread and fear, rather than going and doing something that's going to be a small form of self-sabotage, what could you do to make yourself feel a bit better? Or another way of putting that question, if your friend told you she was having those feelings of dread and fear, what would you suggest that she did? And probably the answer is something along the lines of be kind to yourself, be compassionate to yourself, do something nice for yourself, remind yourself how great you are, all of those gentle, thoughtful things that we do or we encourage others to do, and sometimes we forget to do ourselves. So when you feel that thought coming up, just notice it, say, okay, I recognize this. Doesn't mean it's real, just means that I'm a little having a moment of foreboding joy. And when that happens, what can I do to be compassionate and kind to myself right now? And that is the truly badass way. I hope you have enjoyed this week's podcast. If you have, please do leave me a little message. I love to see them. It makes me really happy. Or, of course, you can come and find me on social media at Harriet Minter. Come and talk to me during the week. I love to hear from you. And I have new things coming up. Announcements coming soon.
You've been listening to Badass Women's Hour. If you like the show, then help more people find us. You can tag us or talk to us on social media using at Badass Women's Hour. Or you can be really lovely and leave us a review and a rating. 5 stars, please. It helps boost us up the podcast rankings and allows other people to find us. We'll be back next week with more badass guests and in-depth chat.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.